Well, hey, Lama! It is a beautifully sunny day here in Phoenix, Arizona. It's only going to be like 100 degrees. I'm getting ready to go see Toy Story 4. And what I'm doing is I'm sitting in my studio here at my private estate. Gonna give you some super segments this week. We have been super busy, AD and I. I've been gigging in various bands and projects. Liz has been out sick, so we're going to take the week off, and here we are. We're going to give you two classic segments from our illustrious past. This week, we are digging way back into Season 1, Episode 9. We always bring up this guy called Dinky Diamond, and AD makes reference to him quite often on the show, so I thought, you know what, let's go back to where he was first talked about on the Shabby Road Record Show, and it's episode 9. So you're going to learn all about him and his tragic story. Oh my God, it's the worst. And before we get to that, we're going to listen to one of my segment from one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. We're going to season 2 for episode 66, an episode called Let's Make a Shabby Deal. What I did for my mystery box is I basically pretended to be Monty Hall, and I brought two records for each selection, and I made AD choose which one. So it was like, if you remember the old game show, Let's Make a Deal, it was always like, you can have this prize right here that you know what it is, or you could trade it for what's behind door number 2. And that was the premise for my whole mystery box. And there was an opportunity for AD to get quote-unquote zonked by having basically a terrible record be revealed to him if he chose what was behind door number 2. So it was great fun, and this is probably the highlight of the entire show here on episode 66, when AD had to choose between a Jeff Beck record and what was behind door number 2, basically. Really fun episode. So I hope you enjoy both of these great segments from our history. And before I drop the needle on the first thing of Let's Make a Shabby Deal, I want to say thanks to our sponsors. That is, of course, alltheworldsastage.net. If you need to get anything printed up for your band or whatever artistic endeavor you are embarking upon, please visit alltheworldsastage.net. They've got great prices. They've got awesome service. They will do anything for you. All right. So without any further ado, let's do this.
Very cool.
All right. Well, what you got there, buddy? I mean, Monty.
Monty McKay is back again with another Let's Make a Shabby Deal. I've got another record right here, and let's find out what record it is.
All right.
Johnny?
We are speaking truth. That's Truth by Jeff Beck. Oh. The influential 1968 album by a guitar master. Comes complete with a heavy sampling of blues standards and vocals by a gritty young Rod Stewart. That's Truth by Jeff Beck.
Thank you, Johnny.
That's a good one.
Well done. Ricky is sweating over there.
I'm the worst person at talking. Having you read this.
Oh, you're doing great. He's doing great, right?
I think it sounds fantastic.
It's gonna
cool. There's a career in this for you, kid.
So, yeah, we got Jeff Beck, Truth from 1968. We're going to hear a song called Morning Dew.
Ooh.
Off side one.
Ooh.
Oh. Now, what can we say about this album? Again, a very influential album, right?
Absolutely.
A lot of guitar players flipped their wig when they heard Mr. Jeff Beck take this. It's kind of cited as one of the first records to take blues standards and really turn them into heavy rock.
Yeah, and it was really
like Zeppelin before Zeppelin did.
A key moment in Rod Stewart's career too, to be in this group. You know, I mean, this was a big deal. He was a star, and again, there was a lot of the usual suspects. I think what was Nicky Hopkins was on this, piano player. So a lot of the cool, hip session cats were doing this stuff. And Beck, you know, ruled the world back then. Man, he was on a roll.
And I've always loved Jeff Beck. If we're talking British guitar players from that period, which would be the mid late '60s, you got Page and Beck and Clapton, right? I mean,
yep.
Those are the triumvirate of British blues guitar players to come out of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Although Page was a little younger, I think, than them. But, I mean, if we're going to put Beck and Clapton together, it's not even close. Who's the better guitarist? But not as Beck almost want to say that more people like bought those Clapton records and stuff than the Jeff Beck records, because Jeff is so adventurous in his music, you know, what, because he left this whole scene and he went on to do Blow by Blow and Wired and went on to the jazz fusion area. So yeah. Therefore, he doesn't have as much influence really as a Clapton did, because Clapton was such a rock figure for years to come.
He had what Clapton had in his back pocket was the Creams.
Yeah.
But he also had his work with the Beatles, you know, in his Harrison, back pocket. Yeah, yeah. You know, his association with Harrison and all that stuff. Obviously, Page was known for Zeppelin. I mean, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the three guitar players couldn't be more different.
Right. That's true. Know? Yeah.
And then what Beck tried to do was become a better guitar player rather than playing with a group and playing a role as such.
Very true. Yeah. I think you're right. And it ends up being one of these deals where Jeff didn't he didn't become famous. But then again, if you ask Clapton and Jimmy Page, of the three of yous, who's the best? They would both of them would say Jeff Beck,
yeah,
without a doubt.
Back, right.
He's wildly inventive and creative, and it's he's one of the best guitar players ever to walk the earth, if you ask me.
Funny, at the end of the day, all three will be remembered.
Yes.
All three will be, and exactly for what they ended up choosing to do. Sometimes you get remembered for something you never planned on doing. You know, you rocked your whole life, and then you have this big acoustic hit or whatever.
Yeah. So we could
but,
do.
I think at the end of the day, most guitar players, most musicians would have to say
Beck.
That Beck is the king of the three of them, you know.
Yeah. So we can do some truth from 1968 or.
Oh, okay.
Before we make a firm decision, what kind of bag do I have here?
Oh, you have a trash and vaudeville bag from St. Mark's Place in New York City.
If you recall, my last mystery bag, or yes, curtain number two, if you will, or right, whatever, had an amoeba bag from Hollywood, California, which is where the band was. So this is also
a
New York band.
Okay.
And I'll give you a little clue, one extra clue here. This is from the 1970s. So it's a New York.
It's going to be a little punk. Maybe it's a Dictators record or something.
Some little New York flavor of New York from the 70s in this curtain number two here. So
that'll
we have
turn that down.
On one side, we've got the master, Jeff Beck, doing a song from the album Truth, 1968. And then we also have a New York group in a trash and vaudeville bag, no less.
Oh, man.
So anybody want to throw in what they want? You're supposed to be catcalling now. It's
number
let's make
two,
it
number two.
Take the curtain, take the bag.
You know, it's Take funny, I had this album in my hand about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I wasn't going to play Morning Dew, but it's funny you pulled this album out.
Hmm.
Oh, man. you know, it's rocking hard so far, and you said New York from the 70s. I got to think that pink bag over there is going to rock harder than what you got here.
So we're going to go with the pink bag.
I'm going to go with bag number two.
You're going to do the bag.
One of my favorite films of all time. I wasn't in it.
Bag number two.
Yes, I used to frequent that at the theater a lot.
All right, so you have chosen bag number two over Truth by Jeff Beck. It's funny you should say that's one of my films, because what we have here in bag number two. This is a bigger bag. Sorry, hang on. From 1976. When King Kong gets on the World Trade Center, it's the King Kong soundtrack. A zonk.
Yes, probably.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's how it's from New York?
Yeah.
Oh, you totally suck.
And we're going to hear side two, track two.
Oh, no. Like gorilla screams.
Kong takes the big apple.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, there's one other thing, AD.
No.
Go ahead and pull out that. Go ahead and pull out that Jeff Beck record, will you?
Yeah.
Just pull it out.
There's a $100 bill I could have had in there, right?
You're mean.
We got to get him off this game show kick, man. We really do. This could get dangerous.
All right, AD is pulling it out of the sleeve. Take the record out.
King Kong.
Oh, what is going on?
What's in there?
It's a $20 bill.
That could have been yours.
He knew he couldn't pass it up.
But hey, put on your King Kong record, man.
Oh, dude. Oh, my God.
So drop the needle on.
You've lost your fucking mind. Oh, wow. So we have to put this on, I guess, don't we?
Yes, that's what you wanted to do. So,
trash.
Oh, before we do that, King Kong from 1976 stars Jeff Bridges, Charles Grodin, and Jessica Lange in her first official film role. And the budget was $24 million, and it took in $90 million at the box office, so it was a pretty successful movie. King Kong is currently rated at 43% on Rotten Tomatoes. And here's one quote from that Rotten Tomatoes website. Here's a review. This is one biblically awful piece of cinema, yet it gets 2 stars because it's just so damn funny. And the soundtrack is actually, I think it's good. It's by John Barry. It's great in the film. The one that I've picked that we're going to hear is kind of the funky one. So I think it's King Kong Goes to the Big Apple or something. AD, drop the needle.
Man, Ryan.
Oh, man.
You guys listening were really, really, I'm really, really sorry.
Could have been listening to Jeff Beck, but AD got the zonk. Now,
we all got the zonk on that, Ryan.
Yes, that's true. That. We zonked everybody.
Yeah.
Did you go see this in the movie? Is this the last?
I did see that.
You took a date. This is the last time you took a date to the movies, right? Remember? Didn't we talk about
it? Yeah, I took a really, really, really cute girl.
To the King Kong movie?
Yeah.
And I think you said it was the last time you took a girl to the movies.
That might have been.
Was King Kong.
Yeah. What year was
like,
that?
Like, oh, the 2005 with Jack Black or whatever? No, 76.
Yeah. Didn't go well.
All right, AD, what you got?
Well, I've got a band that's out of the Midwest originally. Ended
Head
up
East.
In L.A. No, God, no.
You beat them in a Battle of the Bands.
We beat them in a Battle of the Bands. Yeah, I think we talked about that. That was like 1979, my band Monarch.
And I'll never understand why Head East was in a Battle of the Bands in 79.
Well, you know, sometimes, I don't know, was there a big hit out yet or not? I can't remember.
It was. That's like 75.
Yeah.
Save My Life, I'm Going Down.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe they had the hit. They got, you know, could have got dropped by the label.
Maybe.
Or somebody goes, you know, hey, we can do this Battle of the Bands. It's only going to cost us $60, you know. Guaranteed you're going to win it. And they're going, you fucking idiot manager. You know, I wonder how long that lasted. Yeah, that was cool. Who expected that, man? That was a trip. We were just kids. We were shirtless mop-top buffoons.
Yes. I hope you guys enjoyed those Lifers episodes from Kansas City. That was
shirtless.
Fun.
Mop top buffoons.
That was fun to talk about that.
Anyway, this next band, this record came out on Island Records, 1974. Originally formed in L.A. And actually one of Kurt Cobain's favorite albums of all time. It's said to have had sophisticated acerbic lyrics with their wide-eyed, hyperactive frontman and the sedentary Hitler-esque scowling keyboardist.
Oh, you brought Sparks, didn't you? You son of a bitch.
I brought Sparks. Fucking Sparks, man. Ron and Russ Mail, man. This is a first.
Where's Ricky tonight? Because Ricky shares my not real crazy about Sparks.
Listen,
but Deuce likes
Sparks
it.
Is one of my guilty pleasures, dude, man.
You got to put past the vocals.
I saw him on television, you know, and it was rare. And they were just one of those bands that was so visual, and the keyboard player looked like fucking Hitler. I mean, it was just weird.
Yeah.
And the singer was prancing around, and he looked like Mark Bolan. And the two of them are brothers, and the songs were quirky, and the lyrics were funny. And uh-huh. I was, you know, I just went, this is fucking weird, and I loved it. And some people will just go, this is weird, and I fucking hate it.
Did you bring Kimono My House?
I brought Kimono My House.
You get a pass because that is the only Sparks record I like.
It's, you know, they have their big three, like a lot of bands have their big three. Mm-hmm. And it was Kimono My House, then they had Propaganda, and then they had Indiscreet. And those were three good records, man. Listen, a lot of people aren't going to like Sparks. Yeah. I know that, but they hit a button in me. And are they great? No, fuck. No.
But I like them. Thank you. Finally, you admitted it.
No, but they make me. You know, they make me smile. They make me
admit it.
They just make me go, wow, these fucking guys. It's silly and it's goofy and it's one of those things. Like,
there's like three songs that I like on that record, and then I'm out. I'm out altogether. And Sparks has been around for like 20 years,
dude.
Right?
If you're into health food, you're in a health food diet, and you take care of yourself, and all of a sudden you break down and you have like six Hostess Ho-Hos. That's what this band is. They're just one of those guilty little pleasures, and you go, I'm going to have a Susie Q today. And you put on a Sparks record, and that's what I like about this band. But, you know, there's some really cool, weird shit about this stuff.
All right, tell me about it.
Well, their drummer, I loved their drummer. His name was Dinky Diamond. And his actual last name was Diamond. His real name was Norman. Norman Diamond. But he was actually found. They put out an album under the name Full Nelson, or Half Nelson. And then they put out another album called A Woofer in Tweeter's Clothing.
And
didn't do anything, really, but it had these quirky little tunes. But this,
Woofer in Tweeter's Clothing.
But these guys were, you know, they made the records in L.A. And so all of a sudden they relocated to the U.K. before this record came out.
Wait,
right?
Are they British or American?
No, they're American. American. So, but the thing is, they moved to the U.K., and their manager was in some pub, and this drummer, Dinky Diamond, was in some band doing Half Nelson covers. Their band, like that never made it. So somehow...
Whoa.
Yeah. So you imagine you and I go to some bar in Germany, and some band is playing Crash Street Kids cover tunes. And you just go, what the fuck? Are you kidding?
Yeah, right? That would be crazy.
Right? They're playing our music. Like, what? So
I'd buy him a drink.
And they were they happened to be looking for a drummer. And the guy's like, wow, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I like his style. His style is really kind of like, very much like, he's mixed Motown because he's got that quarter note snare drum. Bop, 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 doom, bop, doom, bop, bop, you know?
Yep.
And with sort of the abandon of Keith Moon. So if you can imagine, like, you know, Benny Benjamin from the Motown, from the, you know, the guy who did the Supremes tracks and the Temps and the Four mm-hmm. Tops and that, ta, 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 ta.
Yeah.
Imagine that, but with Keith Moon doing it drunk. So I love this drummer. He's like really cool. Anyway, so he did their big three albums with them and did a couple more records here. And then he finally went, you know, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And he quit the business, you know. So he took them and he made some money with the band. He stored his money. He was a real quiet, real, you know, real nice, easygoing, kind of nice British chap, you know. And so he retired and so he and his girlfriend, Jane, they got this place, this house in this nice, quiet Shia, you know, neighborhood. You know,
West Hemphillshire,
Hertfordshire. All right, and actually it was Sandhurst, Berkshire.
Okay,
and so a nice, you know, terraced.
You hear the sound of UK people clicking off because right, they're like, these guys are terrible.
Sod it. So
no, they're banging on about
this
drummer.
They know about nothing. So they get this nice, quiet place. Well, it wasn't. But a couple of years, all of a sudden, their neighbor, like, was cranking music, like, 24/7 and loud and parties and just loud. And he's a real quiet kind of guy. And he said, please, you know, tone it down. And they're like, fuck you, you know. And night after night after night. So he goes to the, you know, the community housing organizations and goes to the city. And he's getting nowhere with it. And he's going nuts. And this goes on for literally for fucking years. And he thought he'd retire from music, get a job, have this nice house in a quiet.
White picket fence and all
that.
And
he's living in hell, right? And it's funny because on this album, there's a song called This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us, right?
Love that song. That's a good song.
So he's taken now, he's this neighbor and him are doing battling court over and over. And he's losing every case. And he's like, you guys, this is fucked up. These, you know. And the guys, you know, now it's getting hostile and shit. So finally he writes a letter. He goes, I can't deal with this anymore. And he fucking hangs himself in his home.
Whoa.
Yeah. His wife,
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
Right?
Holy shit.
He's like, this is driving me. Nobody's like, and he was getting shut down by the government and shut down by the courts and, you know, his neighbor, and he was mocking him. And this is just a really nice guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Ooh,
yeah. That
okay.
was in 2004. You know, it's like, dude.
Oh, that's
yeah,
a sad
I love
story.
I love Dinky Diamond. He's a cool, you know, is he a good drummer? No, but he's, again, mix that Motown and that Keith Moon and that little sloppiness, but it's kind of cool. Drummers, listen to this guy. I think you'll like him. But anyway, I picked...
Amateur Hour?
No, I was gonna.
They Got Us Not Christmas?
Nope. This is a song called Up in Heaven.
Oh, jeez.
No, it's a good one, man. Now, check this out. The lyrics to this, the song is about this guy and this girl, right?
Deuce, is this a good song?
It's a good one. It's side one, track four. But it's a song about this dude and this girl, and they're going on a cruise. Ryan, I picked this song because it was about a cruise.
Oh, okay, cool.
So they're on a cruise ship, right? So the song is called Up in Heaven, and they go on a cruise ship, and basically he's already dead. He's singing this song to her, and he's dead. He's in heaven, and he's going, you bitch, you pushed me overboard. And so, like, the lyrics are absolutely fantastic.
Which track is it?
It's track four on side one.
Oh, Here in Heaven.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And the lyrics are again, the lyrics to them, they're funny. He delivers it in that silly falsetto voice, but, like, he's dead, remember. He's talking to her. He's here. There are lots of things to do and a panoramic view of the universe completely surrounding us. You know, he's going, it's beautiful up here. But then he reminds her that, you bitch, you killed me. So he's like, I'm up here in heaven without you. I'm up here in heaven without you. And he's just singing, hey, do you often think of me as you overlook the sea? Do I qualify as dearly departed or am I that sucker in the sky? You know, I mean,
wow.
Yeah, the fall guy. So she just pushed him over and copped the insurance. That's what this song is about. It's a great song. Just listen to the drums. Listen to the words. Listen, it's fucking Sparks and I love them and Ryan hates them. And you got to listen to the words. They're great. Hey, close your eyes and drive and listen to the words. Up in Heaven by Sparks from Kimono My House, 1975.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I love Sparks. They're great. Listen, you might hate them. You might whatever. Okay, I'm a fucking weirdo. That was produced by Muff Winwood, though. Now, Muff Winwood did some Mott the Hoople, right? Remember?
What Mott did he do?
He did some of the earlier stuff.
Producer?
Producer.
Okay.
And I believe he did the Mott album, if not the All the Young Dudes album.
Wow, okay, cool. Yep.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, look, Sparks is Sparks. So Adrian Fisher now, you're going to like this. He played a Gibson Les Paul through a Marshall. And if you go to the Gibson Guitar website, he is number 4 on Gibson's greatest glam guitar solos of all time on a song called Never Turn Your Back on Mother Earth from the Propaganda album.
Oh, I got to look that up.
Ryan, people like Sparks, man. People like Sparks. Kurt Cobain said they were one of his favorite bands.
They are interesting, and I appreciate their quirkiness. I just don't know if it's something I want to listen to for pleasure.
Right, right. Yeah, for agony. I want to listen to it when I hate myself. Right. No, this went to number 4 on the UK charts. I mean, they were a big deal in Europe, and you know they couldn't. Again, they had a number 2 single. This Town Ain't Big Enough for Both of Us.
That's a good song. Amateur Hours.
Amateur Hour went to number 10. Yeah, that was a number 10 single there too. And they never I think they didn't break top 100 in the US again. But they were weird. Listen, I liked them. They were one of my weird little bands that I kind of went giggling to myself, and
it's a good place to start, right?
If you like them,
if you want to check out Sparks, and they went on and they still make records, right?
They kind of went into the the cocaine dance thing.
They became a dance band, like
the
a
Studio
disco band,
54 type, real hipster, big in France, big in Germany. Really think they ever really came back to the U.S. and did anything. They pretty much stayed in Europe because Europe loved them, the Swedish, the German discotheques and stuff like that, all through the 80s, 90s. And I believe you're right. Currently, I think they're the
Male
Brothers.
And now is the time on Sprockets when we dance.
Yeah.
They kind of went there, right?
Yeah, the wide-eyed, hyperactive frontman and his falsetto and the sedentary, Hitler-esque, scowling keyboardist, Russ and Ron Mayle, the two brothers. But yeah, I liked them. I like them still. So anyway, sorry, Ryan.
That's all right. That's not the lyrics and the story. I was able to sit through it and enjoy it. So thank you for bringing that.
Yes,
indeed. Hey guys, a portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is brought to you by alltheworldsastage.net. For all your bands and company merchandise needs, click on alltheworldsastage.net and never pay screen charges for orders of more than 24 items. There are no PMS or flash charges either. Mention Shabby Road Record Show and you'll receive 10% off on your order. alltheworldsastage.net.